ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 16 एंटाइटल्ड किंग चित्रकेतु मीट्स द लॉर्ड टेक्स्ट 23 एंड 24 इज ऑन द बोर्ड देहेन्द्रिया प्राण मनो धियोमि यदंश विद्धा प्रचरन्ति कर्मसु नैवान्यदा लौहमिवा प्रतप्तम् स्थानेषु तद्द्रष्टृपदेशमेति Translation: As iron has the power to burn when made red hot in the association of fire, so the body, senses, living force, mind, and intelligence, although merely lumps of matter, can function in their activities when infused with a particle of consciousness by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As iron cannot burn unless heated by fire, the bodily senses cannot act unless favored by the Supreme Brahman. Purport by His Divine Grace, Abhay Charanarayan Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada. Red hot iron can burn, but it cannot burn the original fire. Therefore, the consciousness of the small particle of Brahman is fully dependent on the power of the Supreme Brahman. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Mattah smritir jnanam apohanam cha. From me the conditioned soul receives memory, knowledge and forgetfulness. The power for activities comes from the Supreme Lord. And when the Lord withdraws this power, the conditioned soul no longer has energy with which to act through his various senses. The body includes 5 knowledge acquiring senses, 5 active senses and the mind. But actually, these are merely lumps of matter. For example, brain is nothing but matter. But when electrified by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the brain can act. So this is something wherein the words are carrying form. You can imagine something like an electric ray coming through and electrifying the brain. This is the quality of a poet. Like Srila Prabhupada is manifesting that quality. And again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, different speakers will always manifest this quality. They can bring words and produce action out of words. You can imagine that taking place. This is the rasamalayam, the sweet nectar of the purports of Srila Prabhupada. So here he is saying at one point of time, the brain, before that he has introduced the concept of something being dull matter. So there is dull matter at one point on one side, and then he brings in the concept of electricity. So you can see the contrast here. The brain can act while we are awake or even while we are dreaming. But when we are fast asleep or unconscious, the brain is inactive. Since the brain is a lump of matter, and again he brings in the concept of lump of matter. So there is dead matter, in between there is some dynamism, then again, dull matter. The brain is a lump of matter. It does not have independent power with which to act. So the dynamics of the verse, as you can see, the verse is explaining something like red hot iron entering fire. So there is something passionate here. And the same thing can be reflected when Prabhupada gives his purport. It can act, since the brain is a lump of matter, it does not have independent power with which to act. It can act only when favored by the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Brahman or Parabrahman. This is the way to understand how the Supreme Brahman Krishna is present everywhere, just as sunshine is present because of the sun god in the sun globe. The Supreme Lord is called Rishikesh. He is the only conductor of the senses. Unless empowered by his energy, our senses cannot act. In other words, he is the only seer, the only worker, the only listener, and the only active principle or supreme controller. So going along the same theme, we can see how Prabhupada's words are full of action. He could have easily said, or we can think of so many other words. Just one line previous, he says, he is the only conductor of the senses, as if there is an orchestra and there is a conductor for an orchestra. You could have said, he is the only controller of the senses. He is the only manager of the senses. But he says, a conductor of the senses. And unless empowered by his energy, so the whole verse is very energetic, and his purport also. The verse previous, which we does not have a purport, so we did not read, we'll read it now. The translation is, the Supreme Brahman emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and expands like the sky. Although untouched by anything material, it exists within and without. Nonetheless, the mind, intelligence, senses, and living force can neither touch him nor know him. I offer unto him my respectful obeisances. That is verse 23 and verse 24 for today. So in these two verses, the quality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he manifests himself as Brahman, untouched by material influences, material qualities, material nature, material dualities is being described. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, is expanding on the concept of how the Supreme Lord is the controller of everything. And specifically, he is dedicating major part of the purport to the body and the senses. For a long time, since being in this movement, the experience has been that one particular item which has always been, which has more than received its fair share of criticism, is the material body. Time and again, we have understood how the material body is useless. It is the source of all misery, sense gratification. It is Maya. And somehow or the other, it may happen that devotees may develop a concept of this body is our enemy in the beginning. And this understanding, this feeling, may lead devotees to rejecting their personalities, to rejecting their body, to maybe even torturing themselves. Sometimes even devotees going to the extreme instances of being depressed. Recently there was a letter by Bir Krishna Goswami Maharaj where he says that the aspect of humility is so much stressed in the Vaishnav culture and so misunderstood that devotees start denigrating themselves. And the English adage, I am too dirty to take a bath, may sometimes apply to the devotee. If I take a bath, the bath water will get dirtified. It will become muddy. Sometimes in trying to become humble, we may become, many devotees feel so depressed that they feel that this whole concept, this whole idea of practicing Krishna consciousness is not a matter of this lifetime. If just this lifetime they can somehow or the other survive through the ordeal of experiencing the idea of how miserable this body is and relating to it, that would be sufficient. So therefore, Bir Krishna Maharaj in his letter writes that trying somehow or the other to address this particular situation with that thing in mind, I'm putting forward these particular points. And he says, I do not remember exactly, I cannot exactly rephrase it, but paraphrasing it somewhat, he says, first of all, devotee should feel that I am a very, very important, I am very important for Krishna. I am Krishna's part and parcel. Krishna loves me. He cares for me. He wants me to serve him. And therefore, I'm not really so insignificant. Or I'm not so horrible rather than that. I have some qualifications, and my qualification is that Krishna loves me. Krishna likes me. Krishna wants me to render service unto him. And says, these qualities will, meditating on these qualities for ourselves would be helpful for devotees. Specifically now, since so much it has become a common phenomenon of devotees taking so much counseling outside, attending so many forums for satisfaction and so on and so forth. So he was addressing this issue. And here in Prabhupada, somehow or the other refers to that. Let me give you something very striking that I experienced just last month, some days back. It made me think, right now I was thinking about this, relating to that episode. I'd just come in from outside, preaching outside Bombay. I entered the ashram, it was around 6:30 in the morning. And this time is allotted. All over ISKCON you'll find that universally acceptable, that this is the time when devotees come together in the temple and chant japa. At least they are expected to. It is expected by others. And being a few years in the movement and being ingrained in that doctrine, it becomes natural for somebody like me to, when we come in, we find that, and if something is amiss, then we become a little disturbed. So I did find some devotee at 6:30. He was in his towel in the ashram. So I asked him, what is happening? He said, I'm going for cleaning. So I was really wondering whether the service in charge has allotted this time for cleaning services. He said, no, cleaning for my body. Which basically meant that he had to visit the toilet. Then after some time I found this devotee. He was out around 7:15, 7:20. We have a notice board inside the ashram, reading the details of that. So I became a little disturbed. I called that devotee later on. Asked him, what were you doing? He said, the program is very tight. From 5 to 9, morning program, then now we have yoga classes. So there is 1 hour of that. So I don't get time to relieve myself. We get up early in the morning around 3 or 4. The body is not used to relieving yourself then. And therefore, that is the time when my body actually, it tells me, it speaks, please go. Around 6:30. So I asked this, me and him and others were in a situation where we were in a different temple some time back. And the temple timings there were 5 to, morning program was 4:30 to 8:30. So I asked him that when you were in that situation, did your body even then speak at 6:30 that you have to go? He said, no, at that time I would control myself till around 9. So I said, then what about now? No, 9 to 10 we have some extra exercise class. So I said, what if you postpone it till 10 o'clock? Till 10 o'clock, then it's not possible because 6:30 to 10 o'clock. So then I asked him, what about 3 o'clock when you get up? Why don't you relieve yourself completely then? We take prasad at 7. So 3 o'clock is too early. So then I said, in the previous situation, when you were in the temple, in the other place, prasad was at 5. and you would go and relieve yourself at 9. So when prasad is at 7, you can easily go at 11. He said, no, when it is 5, I can go till 9, but when it is at 7, I have to go at 6:30. I said, this does not make sense. So in that case, why don't you take prasad at 10 o'clock so that you can go much later? So the whole logic was going somewhere else. And finally, the devotee says, this is how my body is. The whole blame is for this body. This is this notorious body. It forces me out of my japa time. It forces me to do things I don't want to do. And this is a natural way I have found that many devotees react. Ultimately, it is the body which is to be blamed, right? It is not our consciousness, our determination, our desire to render devotional service. It is ultimately the body. My body is just like that. My system is like that. It speaks at 6:30. I have to go out of the wonderful atmosphere of the temple or Brahma Muhurta to answer the call of ignorance. So, time and again, this vehicle that has been offered to the living entity to achieve a particular purpose has been abused, has been unfairly criticized. And we find that till a devotee can actually attain the platform where his body, where he is not controlled by the modes of this body, this material nature, it is difficult for him to then maintain that balance. There are always problems. So Prabhupada here is giving something very, very, something that is very hopeful, which can be used for a devotee to practice, to use this body and this material senses nicely in the service of Krishna with proper regulation and determination. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the episode of Narad Muni visiting Dwarka is explained. And it is explained that although Narad Muni is cursed, that he may not stay in one place for a long time, Narad Muni uses his curse in a very opportune way. He comes to Dwarka, stays there for some time, then goes out, then again comes back to Dwarka and stays. So maximum time he tries to spend in Dwarka because he wants to associate with Krishna. And sometimes it happens that he stays in Dwarka for more than a moment, for many moments. So even that is explained, because Dwarka is beyond the modes of material nature, therefore the curse does not apply there. Right? Just as Brahmaji was withheld. My dear Brahmaji, where are you going? The doorkeeper stopped him. So similarly, all curses of the material nature are stopped by the doorkeepers of Dwarka. Where are you going? Don't follow this devotee inside. So Narad Muni was staying in Dwarka and visiting Krishna in various palaces. One day he decided to visit Krishna's father, Vasudev. And as soon as he entered Vasudev's palace, Vasudevji immediately got up from his seat and offered him obeisances and started glorifying him. He said, whenever sages like you visit the houses of living entities, it is simply for their benefit. The visits of saintly persons like you is just like a father who visits his children. And in the purport, Ridhanand Maharaj and the others who have translated explain that just as a father, when he sees his son is sleeping or his daughter is sleeping way beyond their waking time, then out of love and compassion for them, they go and wake them and say, all right, get up, take breakfast. You know, the sun is already up. So they are concerned for them and they wake them up. Similarly, saintly persons like Narad Muni are like parents. They visit the houses of different living entities and they wake them up from the slumber of ignorance. Please get up. Jiva jago, jiva jago. Gaura Chandra bole. Please get up and take up to the practice of Krishna consciousness. So Vasudev ji is expressing that this is the only purpose, this is the benefit of you coming to visit us. And then he glorifies him by saying, and this whole glorification will be in comparison with the demigods. He says, with the demigods, their activities bring both happiness and distress for the living entities. But the activities of saintly persons like you always bring happiness for all living beings. The demigods, if you worship them properly and you offer them whatever they require, then they offer you whatever you require. And it's a nice business. But if you don't give them what they want, and you have to give them what they want because they've already given you something that you want, then they don't give you what you further want. So there is a wanting in this world. Right? And that is a misery. If you don't properly worship them, the demigods don't give you a benefits, and then you're miserable. So this is how the demigods act. But saintly persons, they do not consider whether you offer them anything or you don't offer them. They always will offer you benedictions for your welfare. And he says, demigods are simply acting according to the laws of karma. But saintly persons like you possess a merciful attitude. And therefore, because of that, you do not pay any heed to the karmic activity of the living entity. Whether the living entity, he deserves that benediction or not, whether he deserves a particular result or not, if out of compassion and mercy you feel that he deserves, you offer it to him. And therefore, please, now that you have come here, please tell me, what is the goal of my life? How should a living entity render service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So here is Vasudev ji, who is the father of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, requesting Shripad Narad Muni, please tell me how to render devotional service unto Krishna. Right, so this is something quite extraordinary. Like supposing in the ashram, if our Gopinath Chandra Prabhu is there and Gaurang Prabhu comes and says, all right, Gopinath Chandra Prabhu, tell me, how should I render devotional service, please? Gopinath Chandra Prabhu will be shocked. Would you be? You'll be shocked. Or Govind Prabhu visits Gaur Krishna Prabhu and says, all right, how am I going to dress the deities now? Please tell me. He'll be shocked. So Narad Muni was shocked. Shocked. What do I say now? So the translators explain that considering this situation, Vasudev immediately says that actually just by your coming here, I'm totally satisfied. But since you're already here, let me take the benefit of your association. Please tell me how a living entity should render devotional service unto Krishna. So in this way, Vasudevji is trying to pacify him by saying that please don't become shocked or please don't feel that you're not in a position to explain anything to me. You already are a devotee of the Lord, and I would very much like to hear from you how to render devotional service to Krishna. So hearing these inquiries from Vasudevji, Narad Muni becomes enthused. And he says, my dear Vasudevji, you are perfectly right in making this inquiry about the living entities desire to serve Krishna and how he should serve Krishna. And therefore, let me explain to you the nature of devotional service. And then in one verse, he explains the nature of devotional service. Shrutonupathito dhyata adritvanumodita sadya punati swadharma desha vishvadruhopihi shruto anumodito dhyat adhrita and anupatita. If somehow or the other, one can hear about the process of devotional service, if someone chants the glories of the process of devotional service, anupathita, if someone meditates on the process of devotional service, adrita, if someone accepts faithfully the process of devotional service, or anumodita, if someone glorifies and praises somebody else rendering devotional service nicely, that person, even if he's inimical towards the demigods or towards all living entities, can immediately be purified. So when I was reading this verse never clicked to me. Because Kali Yuga, it is very difficult to understand what is this being inimical towards demigods and inimical towards living entities. It's such a natural phenomenon, such a natural thing, that one hardly pays second heed to it, second thought to it. So in my mind, I rephrase this as, if somehow or the other somebody hears the glories of devotional service, chants the glories of devotional service, accepts faithfully devotional service, meditates on devotional service, or praises somebody who's rendering proper devotional service, then even if such a person is inimical towards those who are movie lovers, towards those who are attracted to drinking alcohol or soft drinks, whatever, you see, the time when this was being mentioned, people were very much attached to these processes. The process of worshipping the demigods was something as equivalent to worshipping the movie stars of today, maybe even beyond that. Therefore, when Narad Muni is mentioning this, he is saying that to be inimical towards the demigods is unthought of, unheard of. If somebody is in that position, that person is really very lowly minded. Just like in today's world times, if you tell someone that I do not watch any movies, serials, they'll think you're crazy. And if you tell them I hate them, they'll really blacklist you. So that was what was the situation for those who were hating the demigods then. And if someone is in that position, that is the glory of devotional service. It can relieve the person from that, it can uplift him and make him a pure devotee, somebody who can do all these five activities. So this is how Narad Muni is trying to explain the glories of devotional service unto Vasudev. And then Narad Muni in one verse explains something very important. The next verse. He says, Tvaya parama kalyana punya shravana kirtana smarito bhagavan adya devo narayano mama. Today you have made me remember my Lord, the supreme blissful personality of Godhead Narayan. The supreme Lord is so auspicious that whoever hears and chants about him becomes completely pious. Tvaya, by your mercy, parama kalyana, you have offered unto me the topmost benediction. Punya shravana kirtana, by giving the opportunity to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And because of this, smarito bhagavan, I am again remembering Krishna. Now here are two personalities. One is Vasudeva, who is the father of Krishna. His whole life is dedicated to Krishna. And another is Narad Muni. In the first canto, is described as the manifestation of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narada, somebody who imparts, who offers the mercy to the living entity in the form of Lord Narayan, in the form of Lord Krishna. And he is feeling so grateful that he is getting an opportunity to talk about Krishna consciousness to somebody who is already totally Krishna conscious. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, his tour from Shantipur to Jagannath Puri is being described. And as he goes along that route, Nityanand Prabhu is a tour guide. Nityanand Prabhu had spent more than 20 years of his life touring various holy places. So he was definitely an expert. He knew what the holy place was, he knew what the Leelas took, everything he knew about that. And therefore, he was explaining the glories of all the holy places. And then they came to this Kshetra, the place of Remuna. And there they took the darshan of K. Kheer Chor Gopinath. And at that place, Lord Chaitanya said, my dear Nityananda Prabhu, I will be the guide here. I want to describe the glories of this place. And please hear, devotees, while Lord Chaitanya wants to describe the glories of Kheer Chor Gopinath. Because Lord Chaitanya is the Paramatma in the heart of every living entity, right? So obviously he knows the mind of Lord Nityananda. He knows that Nityananda is not there. This was the only question that he did not study for his exams. Right? This was the only syllabus. And therefore Lord Chaitanya wants to save him the embarrassment. And then he comes in and... But that is not so. Lord Chaitanya says, the glories of this place was revealed to me by my own spiritual master, Ishwara Puri. From his own mouth I had heard the glories of this holy place. And specifically with the glories of this holy place is attached the glories of his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri Maharaj. And I want to describe the pastime that is related to Madhavendra Puri Maharaj. In the beginning years of ISKCON, if you ask any devotees, they will say that whenever they came in contact with any devotee, the first thing they heard was, how is Prabhupada? Who is Prabhupada? And through him, they got the connection to the previous acharyas. They would have the parampara there. Indradhuna Maharaj relates that the first time devotees came, these four sannyasis, Vishnujan Maharaj, just the whole night he was telling him the pastimes of Prabhupada. Then he established the altar and left the silver spoon there. He writes that in the silver spoon. So they got introduced to the previous acharyas and to Krishna. So devotee is very eager to speak about his spiritual master, to speak about other devotees, their glories, their pastimes. Specifically when he's heard that from the other acharyas. So here Lord Chaitanya, he's in the mood of a devotee, he exhibits that quality. And after describing the whole pastime of Madhavendra Puri Maharaj, he says, and now I am remembering that verse that was so dear to Madhavendra Puri Maharaj. And simply remembering that verse, Lord Chaitanya becomes mad in ecstasy. And imagine this scene. He's sitting there, Kheer Chor Gopinath, four devotees with him, Nityananda Prabhu, Mukunda Dutt, Damodar Pandit and Jagadanand Pandit. And they are nicely sitting there, hear Krishna Katha, and suddenly Lord Chaitanya goes mad and the pujaris are all there. And when Lord Chaitanya's madness is described, sometimes we may feel embarrassed to be there. Because here is a sannyasi, exalted personality, and suddenly he's crying and his hairs are standing on hand and you're not able to control him. But Lord Chaitanya's activities are not embarrassing, they were very attractive. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everyone was simply attracted to him. He was running up and down and just going on, Aideena, Aideena, Aideena. He was remembering the verse that Madhavendra Puri Maharaj was remembering at the last moment of his life. When he was about to leave his body. Aideena Dayadranath hai Mathuranath kadava lokase. Ridayam todaloka kataram. Daita Brahmyati Kim Karomyaham. This is the verse that was spoken by Radharani in lamentation or in remembrance of Krishna who had already left for Mathura. She was in Vrindavan, she cannot leave Vrindavan. And Krishna has gone to Mathura. So she is addressing herself as Dina and Dayardra. I am hopeless, poor, and wretched. And what is the, why is she poor? Because she has just lost the great wealth of Krishna. Why is she feeling wretched? She is miserable because she is not getting the association of Krishna anymore. And what is making her the most, what is causing her the most pain is when she is addressing Krishna as Mathuranath. Because Krishna, at that time, he had a chariot, he had the means to go to Mathura, but the Brijvasis did not have the means. They were poor. They were just from the cowherd community. From the material point of view, they did not have the facilities. And from the spiritual point of view, Krishna told them, I'll come back, so stay back here. So all they could do was remember Krishna. And it is explained that this mood can only be experienced and understood by Radharani. And she is expressing her mood by saying, oh Mathuranath, you are there. And I am here, I am wretched, I am hopeless. In this situation, can you understand how helpless I am feeling? How miserable I am feeling? She says, Ridaya Kataram. And Madhavendra Puri Maharaj remembering that. Hridaya Kataram means my heart is attached to you. But I am here and you are there and my heart is completely fixed at a lotus feet. Right? Just like supposing you take stick fast of Fevicol on your finger and you touch this stand here and leave it for 15 seconds. Try to remove it. Will it come off? And try to remove it. You'll experience intense pain. That pain is nothing compared to the pain when the heart becomes attached to Krishna and Krishna has gone away. It is as if the adhesive force is being tested to its ultimate limit. And all you can do is suffer. And therefore she says, Kataram, I am aggrieved. My heart is aggrieved. And in this situation, just imagine if it's the same analogy. Somebody tells you, take nice rasgulla. Will you feel like taking rasgulla or even ice cream or even whatever? You're like, please do something about this. So that is what she's saying. Daita Brahmyati. Now this servant is totally perplexed. What should I do? I'm totally bewildered. Kim karomi aham? I cannot come to Mathura. You're not coming back. This thought is simply troubling me so much. My heart is, it's like being pulled towards you. But it's still within me. And this intense feeling of Vipralamba has been experienced by Srimati Radharani. And that intense feeling was being experienced by Madhavendra Puri Maharaj also. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remembering that was also experiencing it. And therefore, he was going, Aideen, Aideen, Aideen. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, somehow his vocabulary was lost. He was no longer the Nimai Pandit, the great scholar. All that Gyan and everything was gone. And all he could do was just go on blabbering, Aideen, Aideen, Aideen. Like a child. Hopelessly crying out for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave a hint. This is how a devotee should chant for Krishna when he's chanting his rounds. This helplessness, this hopelessness should be there. That when he chants Hare Krishna, instead of going to sleep, he's not... Yeah, we also cannot go ahead beyond Krishna sometimes because you're Hare Krishna. But when a devotee really chants, when we attain that platform of love, one cannot go beyond the word Krishna. These words, these two syllables, when they enter my ears, they completely fill my ears with nectar. I desire lakhs of tongues and thousands of ears, and my heart is totally conquered and my senses are totally inert. This is how Rupa Goswami describes the word Krishna. These two syllables. That is the experience of the word Krishna. What to speak of the whole Mahamantra? How will one be able to chant the whole Mahamantra in that state? So that is how Lord Chaitanya is experiencing. And the devotees are observing that. Somehow they calm him down. And then in the future verses later on, it is explained, the scenario is explained, what was taking place when Madhavendra Puri Maharaj was chanting this verse. He was experiencing this separation from Krishna. And suddenly one of his disciples called Ramachandra Puri comes there and says, Guru Maharaj, you are in so much misery. Why don't you meditate on Brahman? Brahman is Om Shanti, Shanti. Everything will be Shanti. Your show is Shanti. So please chant. Please give up chanting Krishna. Krishna is causing so much trouble to you. You are simply lying there. You cannot move. But your heart is palpitating and your body is simply so much in trouble. Your mind is in anxiety. Give up Krishna. Meditate on Brahman. And Madhavendra Puri Maharaj cursed him and said, get lost from here. I am already in trouble. I am not able to remember Krishna. And now you are making me more aggrieved by telling me to forget Krishna and remember Brahman. So before I curse you any further, go away from here. You are discharged. Take a voluntary retirement scheme, VRS. Go away. And then Ishwar Puri Maharaj, his other disciple, comes in. And he calms down Madhavendra Puri Maharaj by two activities, by chanting the holy names and by relating pastimes specifically from the Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna is coming back to his devotees. Krishna is coming back from the pasture grounds. Krishna is coming back from playing on the Yamuna. So here again there is Sambhoga, and that calms him down. And he blesses him, that I bless you, that you may become a lover of Krishna. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions, here is an instance where two personalities received punishment and blessing from the same person because of their different attitudes, because of how they behaved in that situation. So my point here is relating all these things. First is Prabhupada here, then that story about our devotee in the ashram, then Narada Muni's visit, and this Chaitanya Charitamrita pastime. You see, whenever devotees get the opportunity to associate with another devotee, they feel very grateful. Why? Because as Narada Muni mentions here, it gives them the opportunity first to remember Krishna. There is smaranam. And secondly, it gives them the opportunity to chant and hear about Krishna. There is shravan and kirtan. And these aspects are the most important aspects of devotional service. Shravan, kirtan, smaran. Ishwar Puri Maharaj saw the opportunity that was available and did exactly that. And see the benefit of such an association. The scene is the same. It just depends on devotees who take that opportunity and utilize it for the full benefit. Ishwar Puri Maharaj saw that he could serve his Guru Maharaj by engaging in these three processes of devotional service. Shravan, Kirtan, Smaran. And Ramchandra Puri, he gave up these processes. If in the association of devotees, if these three processes does not take place, then we'll become cursed. We do not receive the blessing. Right? And if we take the association of devotees for what it is meant for, we are blessed to become lovers of Krishna. That is the glory of devotional service. That is the glory of the process of devotional service, and the glory of the devotees of Lord Krishna. The devotees of Lord Krishna give you association in what form? They allow you to render all this process of devotional service. And this opportunity is not afforded by any other type of association. And how do the devotees of, and how are you able to associate with devotees? Through this body. This body is a vehicle that allows you to associate with other devotees and render the process of devotional service, Prabhus and Matajis. And that is what Prabhupada says. This is the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that is making our senses active. He withdraws his favor and the senses become inert. It is a favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he gives us association of devotees where we can activate our senses. And if in the association of devotees, somehow or the other, the favor is withdrawn, and there are various reasons where the Supreme Lord will withdraw his favor, we will become lump of matter, no dynamism. We are not electrified. There is no electricity, there is no energy. Devotional energy is not present there. So this is the ingenuity of Srila Prabhupada, of the parampara of the devotees. They make situations arrange. Srila Prabhupada was not, one day he did not think, all right, now what should I do with ISKCON? All right, let me establish a morning program in this way. He specifically had a vision. He wanted to have an association of devotees where devotees would get the opportunity to render these aspects of devotional service, specifically in Kali Yuga, where hearing and chanting is so important. And that is what he has offered us. And he has offered us the opportunity to make our senses electrified, to receive the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only by Krishna's energy can our senses become electrified, can they become energized. And we have to be grateful to Krishna that he has allowed us to use his body to render devotional service. Not always. Prabhupada mentions, in the Bhagavad Gita also Krishna mentions of the different types of tapasya. Torture of the body for any other reason, doing fast tapasyas for any other reason other than to further our devotional attitude towards Krishna is simply tapasya in the mode of passion and ignorance. It disturbs the Paramatma within the heart. So So here, Prabhupada is, let me again, refer the last three lines, four lines of this purport. The Supreme Lord is called Rishikesh. He is a conductor of our senses. Unless empowered by his energy, please, let us allow our senses to be empowered by Krishna. Let us not reject this wonderful gift that Krishna has offered us in the form of this senses, this body. Unless empowered by his energy, our senses cannot act. Krishna is ready to empower us. We have to allow him to do that. In other words, he is the only seer, the only worker, the only listener, and the only active principle or supreme controller. So powerful words. You just allow Krishna, we should just allow Krishna to empower senses. He will do the rest of the process of devotional service. Everything else is, he is the only seer, he is the only listener, he is the only active principle. He is a supreme controller. Devotional service is so easy. Chanting Hare Krishna is so easy. It is only a matter of desire, that's all. And Krishna fulfills that desire. Krishna will do everything. For he is the only controller. He is the conductor of the senses. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Alright, just one question.
They can, these demigods, how they can favor? Because without the sanction of Krishna, it means demigods, they are rebellious to Krishna. Or second thing, second part is that in India we find everyone worshipping demigods, most of the people. But in other countries other than India, people are not worshipping demigods. But we find them better situated in all other respects. Whereas these people, from the birth, they are worshipping demigods. So had the demigods got something to do with this type of cases, these people would have been far better than, you know, in case of athletes or finance or so-called scientific advancement. These people must have been better than them, but this is not so. Please explain.
Demigods are never rebellious of Krishna. Krishna has already sanctioned them and given them the authority and the power to do certain activities. So they have the sanctioning power for certain activities. To a certain extent, they can do that. They can give you the benefits. Right? So they can take that. To some extent, it may seem that they are taking independent decision. Like for our brahmacharis in the ashram, the ashram inmates, it is a mandate that they should be present within the temple hall for the Bhagavatam class. But within the class, they have some independence to sit here or there. Now, if you think that they are acting independently and being rebellious of the management, that is not true. That much independence they have. They have the independence also to tell someone, please go ahead. They don't need not go back to the service in charge and tell him, oh, please tell him to go ahead. So similarly, demigods do like that. They have parameters, they have their territories within which they act independently. Only that much. And second part of the question is, forget about people in the, a Coca-Cola machine works better in the West than in India. Although it's the same machine. So the whole process in Kali Yuga, they are better off because they have certain, within from a material point of view, they have established themselves in a better way. There's nothing to do with demigods or no demigods. Right? And to some extent also Prabhupada explains in the fourth chapter of the Gita, 12th verse, I guess, where he explains three categories of why people reject the scriptures. What is that? The verse? Vitaraga bhaya krodha. Right? In that he explains, is it there or somewhere in the Gita? I think it is there. He explains that sometimes people also worship very powerful personalities in this world, just as previously they were worshipping the demigods, and they get returns from them. Alright? And from my limited understanding, we don't have the full understanding of what is demigod worship. It's very vast. And all over the world, some form of worship always goes on. They always worship negative forces, dark forces, this force, that force, some higher, whatever, they have their own concepts. And that is what is called some form of higher worship. They'll get returns for that. So just because we have maybe understanding of a few forms of Durga and one form of Ganesh, that does not mean we know all the Vignahartas. That is just one of them. We have understanding of Lord Shiva. What about the 10 other Rudras? They are also demigods. Even Kali is a demigod. Dwapar is a demigod. Kali is considered in the Mahabharata to be the lowest of the demigods. But he is there as a demigod. So somebody must be worshipping him in a way that we do not know. We do not know the way to worship Kali. Somebody else does it. They may get the benefit. So to say that they do not worship demigods would not be appropriate. It would be much more appropriate to say that we do not know whether they are worshipping them or not. For we do not know all the modes of demigod worship. And we don't even need to know them. Better we don't know them. We just know, let us learn only one aspect of demigod worship. The supreme demigod. Right? In the scripture it is described that among all the demigods, Lord Vishnu is his greatest. Right? So this is just as Prabhupada sometimes says, the supreme living entity. So among all the living entities, Krishna is the supreme living entity. So among all the demigods, the supreme demigod is Krishna or his God. The one with the capital D. So if we can make people, those who are demigod worshippers, if we can tell them, this is the supreme demigod, worship him. He's the root of the tree. And if we can also understand that worshipping Krishna means worshipping the supreme demigod, it's perfect. So for devotees, that is enough. We should not even try to understand what other demigod worshippers are. I think we'll stop here. It's late. You could ask me personally later on. It is not necessary, but at the same time, if someone does it, it is not wrong. Is it necessary for all students to take admission in a medical college? I understand your question, sir. If you allow me to explain, individual should be left with his choice. Right? Just as we expect God not to interfere with what we do, let us also accept that, let us allow the individuals also to express their independent choices. If some individual decides that is how he wants to express his choice, let him do it. But it is not necessary. It is not necessary. Yes, 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 yes. Definitely, definitely. Somebody can be just like you. You would be a perfect example. Welcome. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.